Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, August the 15th, 2017. This is our 357 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we start, I want to say thanks to James in North Wales, Pennsylvania, for sending a check every month to Historicity Productions. And that pays for having the hours all up on the web all the time. And I just want to say hello to Dan in Maryland again. And Dan, he's a good guy in Maryland. That's hello, Michael. And I want to say that I have run into so many people because of my website, not the Saturn Earth Connection, but my Tesla website, who just pull my leg. But Dan, he's a cool guy. Hi, Dan. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Curtis. Hi. Talking about Tesla, I just remembered a little statement made by Albert Einstein. Mm-hmm. You know who that is?
Oh, yeah, Albert Einstein.
Everybody does, right? Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know how reporters, you know, people like to interview a person, famous person. They ask Albert Einstein this question. Mr. Einstein, how does it feel to be the smartest man on Earth?
Oh, I know what he said.
Go ask Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, ask Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, so because I remember really when I got educated on Nikola Tesla was about a year after the Saturn encounter, you know, Dan and Nikola. I was getting all kinds of high-tech education, but playing with holograms and laser beams, and you name it, playing around with a lot of physics.
Sparks.
And
electricity.
The Tesla coil was fun.
Tesla coil, that's fun.
Yeah, the one we built one, and it was about, we put it on the top of a table so you could work the various, you know, adjustments, which are pretty primitive.
The spark gap.
Yeah, it was about 4 feet tall. So,
did you have a motorized spark gap?
No, it was a regular spark gap that you could fire from neon light spark gap. So some of the high voltage was off the line. Okay. And that was exciting the voltage through the spark gap of the high frequency coil. Mm-hmm. And then it was loosely coupled to the high voltage coil, which was the tallest piece. It was wound up about 4 feet tall.
Did you ever make one of those static electricity balls?
Yeah. I made that when I was in the fourth grade. I made one with a project that Dad gave me to make. I created a motor. I wound the motor up, and then it ran the rubber band up onto the static ball. But we're having a hard time generating the static because Hawaii has so much humidity in the air. Went up in elevation a little bit to get more rarefied air, then it could make the static ball generate a little bit more. And my motor wasn't turning it really that fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I wound it just right. But that was an education in itself, playing around with things at a young age. Stayed with me all. That's why I was pretty interested in looking at that design that came out from Michelson, I guess. He had given me an email concerning the winding design. Because I remember asking my dad, why do we have to switch it? Why can't we just make the magnetic field just flow around? And, you know, he says, well, that can't be done. You know, it has to be switched to a commutator.
Yeah, so it keeps going around.
You know, it's like it's just chasing, the magnetic field chases.
Yeah, chase.
Chases itself. Why can't it just be continuously smooth, you know? I have to do this switching in it. Well, I think that's where a new design of free energy, I still want to explore that a little bit more. Because that is something that I think a lot of engineers have been coming up with that idea, just really not able to make it sensible. Mm-hmm. Although might be very simple to do, in a sense. But anyway, that's another point. So playing around with those things was pretty fun. Some of them were kind of. I did it. One thing I didn't make was Jacob's ladder. And Jacob's ladder, I think, had too much voltage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it could, you could get pretty good jolt out of it.
A pretty good jolt, right. Well, have 1 amp in there and that's enough.
You get 1 amp of that, that's pretty bad.
Oh yeah, that'll...
If it's at high frequency, then you'll probably not go through your heart. But 1 amp through your heart will kill you. Anyway, that's another story. I took a high voltage hit that approached around there in DC voltage.
Mm-hmm.
That was bad. Blew a hole in my knee. A whole bunch of sparks came out of my fingertips. Yeah. So from my knee to my fingertips was the trace of the path.
Mm. Did it burn you all the way through?
No, it just burned the area where the...
Oh, where it made
the
contact?
Spark came out. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was bad. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, it was one of those very quick moments in your life that you never forget.
Yeah, but during that quick moment, I could think and reason and... realize, oh no, I did it. You know, that those thoughts are going through your head.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, my body's not controllable, but my mind was fully controllable. Mm-hmm. But that is a very important factor about our mind, more than, you know, these guys are getting shocked and electrocuted. They know everything that's going on, you know. The death by electric chair is awful. Yeah. Anyway, we got into that subject because of the superiority of the mind. Having the mind actually overcome even high voltage incidences still works.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not just brain going on there. There's more things going on there that are outside of the material sphere that we're in. Yeah. Or what I mean by sphere, I mean a domain where we live in, you know, the material realm. It's actually stepped over to the spiritual realm, which is immune to high voltage electricity.
Well, I mentioned before we started about SpaceX launch yesterday. Headed up to the International Space Station, and it was a magnificent launch, and the first stage came back and landed right where they wanted it to, and they had a camera right on board first stage, and you could actually see the shoreline of Florida with the puffy little clouds and the first stage coming down. And when Michael and I were talking about that before we started, the first stage was, 230 feet high. That's a big long tube, 12 feet in diameter, to land perfectly. And he's landed a few of them on the barge. Remember, did you see them land on the barge?
No.
Yeah, he's landed on that barge in the Atlantic, so doesn't have to come back. But they didn't land on the barge yesterday. And the Dragon spacecraft is going to dock with the International Space Station tomorrow morning, August 16th. So that's just amazing to see, that launch and the first stage coming back. And John from Maryland, he sent those photographs. He went and had a, it's on, I still have it on the listen page, because the eclipse is coming up next Monday. Traveling, it's going to go right across the mainland of the U.S. from Oregon to South Carolina. I hear it's supposed to be like 70 miles in diameter. And John, he said he's going to travel somewhere where there's no clouds. John, I wish you luck, and I want to see you have to send the pictures, whatever you get. But he sends pictures of his binoculars he's going to use, and I go, oh my gosh, binoculars. But if you're in the right spot, I read this morning a school in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, are not going to let the kids go out and play during recess during the eclipse. And I go, oh, that's terrible. But they're not going to have a total eclipse, so... Michael, a lot of people are going to be blind during this event. They're not supposed to look at the eclipse or a partial eclipse. But we'll... So that's going to happen next Monday, the 21st of August.
Yeah, when I was in elementary school, we had an eclipse that we prepared for. I'm not sure. I don't think it might have been a total eclipse, but it was very close to one. But anyway, we had all kinds of stuff. We were given, you know, remember old negative film?
Yes.
Yeah, those fully exposed negative. Those were pretty dark, you know. People had those. The kids that had really good, they had like really good welder's goggles.
Well, this hasn't happened on the mainland for 99 years.
Well, to go right across. Yeah, yeah. Well, there have been lots of...
Maybe a little corner or
different,
something.
Different, yeah. Here or there.
And when did it happen in Hawaii?
Well, for me, the last time was 1990-something right there. I looked up, and it was nothing but overcast sky. I said, forget it.
Yeah.
Just watch night come. We're trying to watch. I think some places the news had it being filmed at Haleakala or Mauna Kea. It was way up above the clouds. So. Mm-hmm. That's an indirect observation.
Well, it's a real event.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just a, you know, celestial event that is, you know, for, you know, primitive man, if, you know, somebody were able to tell you that, you know, he could make the sun go away for a little while. Probably think of the guy as some kind of god, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think actually happened. I forget. It might have been somebody who had celestial knowledge of it and, you know, had an almanac and you approximately when an eclipse was going to happen. Anyway, that's a, when it comes down to celestial events, they are, or any, you know, predicted celestial events could be very, very frightening for people. But the one that was interesting to me was the one in, I think, Portugal with the little girls over there at Fatima, and how the sun was dancing around and there was an eclipse, and also a viewing of what they, an apparition of what they believe was the Lady of Fatima, which is, some would say it's the Madonna, the Virgin Mary, but it was the Lady of Fatima, and gave them a pretty much a peering a glimpse into the future. But this was definitely not a physical being, but something that could be seen and interacted with, and which has very great similarities to many of the things that I had experienced in the New Jerusalem, because I was not only working with material people, but also people who were someplace beyond the material realm, which is described as Marantia, or then absolute spiritual beings. And I could interact with them, and they all were, what was always amazing me and kept me, keeping my mind at a level of, you know, realization that we are held in a kind of a, you know, bubble right now. And it's not like there where they're interacting one with another as if they all are okay, you know. Not bad to be a mortal, you know. You're on your way to the ascent career and moving along, and others are ahead of you. I mean, many of them are helping one another to get along or to progress in the ascent career. And this is the mixture of the different types. I remember Jesus Christ. When he was talking about the fact that he knew he was going to be put to death, and he knew who would betray him, well-known betrayer, Judas Iscariot, who, you know, turned him in. He thought he was doing a political thing. Thought he actually could force the hand of God. Turned out, didn't force anything. This was a pure betrayer. But what Christ was talking about prior to that was saying that I'm gonna, you see me now but for a while, but then you won't see me for a while, and then you'd see me again. He was talking about that transformative process called the resurrection. And that resurrection was very, very real to those who viewed the incident, viewed the actual encounter. We talk about spiritual encounters, Lou. We talk about encounters with extraterrestrial beings, UFOs, and the transports that come about and move beings, both physical or semi-physical, and on the fully spiritual beings are all operational. And New Jerusalem over there already started is a point in which they intersect and actually operate one with another, and operate in, you might call them transport type craft, UFO, disc shaped craft, other super large others of pure light energy. And it's an amazing mixture of it. And it's a vital part of what goes on and what we are about to enter into the next phase of our development. Because, like I was opening on and saying, looking at the eclipse as a celestial event, it's being very rare. People want to look at it. But we are not primitive. We are not superstition, driven by superstition and looking at such a thing as a very spiritual event or something miraculous. And this is one of the things that was very important about our next step in the development of our civilization, our society, ourselves, is our ability to understand the workings of the universe, the workings of the reality of the mechanisms of space, and also to participate and observe. So we don't, all of a sudden become very, very misconstrued in terms of our appreciation of the next level of interface that we're going to start to attain. Curtis, you were kind of always, you always seem to be, saying, why don't I get us, I wouldn't mind taking, getting a ride up to the Tatanella up into space or to the New Jerusalem and see, take a camera along and you got, get some pictures and all that stuff and come back. I think they have a different level of responsibility that may exclude your camera, may exclude a lot of things. But that is something that is about, coming about, that may very well become much more active soon in terms of our ability to interact with our, the brotherhood of the universe. That is something that Christ often talked about. He said his kingdom is not of this world, and he has other sheep of another fold that he has to tend to, the work with. In other words, the greater universe that he was, but he had to attend to the very small area, just one little planet that was backward and struggling with just survival. People were struggling in survival. I was listening to the struggles of a North Korean boy who had, it's on YouTube, and he had escaped North Korea through China. He basically walked out of North Korea in broad daylight, but he managed to get across in a way that was not observed, and he got in China. But he was talking about the difficulties and how he had hope. One of the things he had was hope. But he says, not the kind of hope that you might be thinking of. His hope was going from one trash can to another trash can during that time of the Great Famine, 2009 or something around there. The Great Famine. And his hope was that there would be a morsel of food in the next trash can that he would hunt into, looking for a morsel of food. And at that level of hope, it was just pure survival. And that's North Korea, civilized country, supposedly civilized country, having numerous people of that. His father starved to death, giving all his food away to him, the young boy, so that he could survive. And he ended up being able, through help with people in China, actually helped them to get to the U.S. And he's now an immigrant kind of immigrant, you might call it, one that is running away from really a hard time, but really remembering the radical difference in culture between basically the lies that were put on to the people of North Korea about the rest of the world, not just the U.S., but the rest of the world, and how they were thought to worship. But they, at his position, he couldn't feel like Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-il was any real person to worship because he was starving. But there are others who had different opinions, and their struggle in North Korea. You compare that with Jesus Christ in terms of coming over to appreciate the human struggle, but also to open one's mind and heart up to the greater acceptance and the greater inheritance that we have in front of us, before us, and we can choose to abandon, you might call it, the struggle for greatness, or the struggle for self-importance, for the struggle to find divinity, to find truth, and to remain on the side of truth. Truth is perhaps one of the most important factors that allow us to ascend. If we can abandon many of the you might call it, the minor hopes, and then we can truly inherit the greater hope. The greater hope being one of divine attainment. So anyway, that's a little bit of a mixture, you know, of celestial friendship. We have to kind of like ascend to see that a mixture. They have to condescend many times to get to relate to us, or try to relate to us, try to direct us. But we also have to try to ascend and abandon certain animal nature and animal characteristics to participate in their way of being, the divine nature.
I like that celestial friendship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's for real. It really is a celestial friendship, because friendship has a lot to do with being able to, you know, interact socially. Having a certain friendship means that we are not trying to destroy one another, but to kind of like, you know, help each other and enjoy one another's company. That's another part of the characteristics of being human, but not only being human, but being of a sentient nature, one that can participate in a divine way in higher levels of being. And that's where even that North Korean boy that was looking from rubbish can to rubbish can for just a morsel of food and not being successful, and his greatest hope was to get to the next rubbish can and hope to get that just to survive, because this is an important factor. Without that survival drive, the desire to live, how can one inherit eternal life if one doesn't care about living? This is an important factor about everlasting life. And once having that drive, it is then to find living water, the living essence of that continual motive, because it is not selfish attainment that can continue to feed that drive. It may last maybe for a lifetime, but not much more. It eventually will dry up, and we would end up with nothing. But if one is able to become a conduit of living energy and living water, then there is real life. Then there is real eternal life possible. And that real eternal life is what can, you know, take the higher notion of greater hope, a greater hope of that higher brotherhood that can actually, you know, tear down many of the civil struggles on our planet and bring look at just the idea. Okay, let's look at North Korea. There's this famous picture of North Korea at night against South Korea. You've seen that picture, Curtis?
Oh yes, on my iPad I can use maps and go out into space a little bit until you can see the shadow of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like right now North Korea's in darkness. It's dark over there now. And
yeah.
It's dark in North Korea because they don't have any lights.
Yeah. South Korea's all lit up, right?
Enormous, yes. Like a...
And it's a light. There's a line at that parallel there.
Yeah, the DMZ. You can
DMZ.
See exactly where...
A straight line.
Straight line.
Yeah, demarcation. A peninsula is like... What it shows is...
The life on
when, when the human spirit is able to operate in the liberty of, you might say, the divine ascent career, the freedom that it is given allows for, you might say, enlightenment, but it also shows that there's a physical escalation of civilization that is shared. Right now, one of the things that this person that was from North Korea was asked a question. He says, what is Pyongyang like? You know, that's the capital. That's that one speck of light that's in North Korea.
Yeah, a big speck of light, but it's the capital's all lit up.
Yeah, and it's surrounded by darkness.
Darkness.
Yeah, and he said, well, Pyongyang is for the elite, and they're not for the regular people. So when you look down at South Korea, there, the regular people are totally illuminated. You know, it's like it's symbolic of the situation of the human spirit and true hope turned loose to higher levels of expression. And there is no resemblance in the Koreas between the North and the South. The North seems to be stuck in a modality for the rest of their people that is actually worse than it was 60 years ago. Only in Pyongyang is a little speck of civilization, but one that is totally imbalanced. So if you want to see enlightenment come to the planet Earth, those divisions have to come down so that the human destiny becomes much more apparent and easy, you know, you might say, more fluid, easily worked toward the divine. One of the things I notice about South Korea, having visited South Korea, is that Christianity is very strong there. Worship of God is very strong there, and the Christian teaching, as they understand it, through the same Bible that we have throughout the world, which has its impression, and it's a kind of unified Christian doctrine, but it does give liberty. When there is liberty, there is this higher civilization. So And that is something that is afforded to the mind of the human being. Watching the North Korean propaganda mind control start from a very young age in the worship of human being. This also happened in Japan, where they would worship the emperor like a god, a living god. I remember trying to get that concept into my head, that the emperor in Japan was like, well, it's no different than the Uns, Kim Jong Un, Kim Jong's of the Kim Jong Un, or Kim Jong Il, Kim Jong Un, other formers. They're human divinity, you might say, but it's kind of weird. But they're not divine at all. I'm just thinking they are. In any case, it's just a remarkable difference. It's also become planetary, as the desperation of human desperation for the continual, you might call it, lording over other humans remains one form or another, when governance is not true and enlightened. So
the people of North Korea, I mean, what do they think of themselves as their life compared to the emperor Kim Jong-un? What does Kim Jong-un think of the everyday people in his country?
That's a hard thing to answer, because his circle, which is within, has been brought up within, has been shielding from the everyday people.
Yeah.
Pyongyang, again, is for the elite. It's all an act. Korea, North Korea, is a very well-balanced act. It is not true living. So he's detached. He's detached from the people on the outskirts. You know, I noticed, and I said, when he went to the border of Korea, he told me to look at the obvious difference, the well-forested South Korea, and the immediate change in the topography of the lack of trees in North Korea. It was like green trees in a line. Suddenly, the mountain changed to brown dirt. Very little green.
Because they harvested all their trees?
Pirating, or just illegally foresting the trees for desperation. For, you were mentioning that Hawaii doesn't have any. We need seasons.
There are seasons there, but your winter is.
But they have just serious seasons there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have firewood in the winter, they will. You're the one that told me people freeze to death.
Yeah, people freeze to death.
Like I was born and raised in Hawaii, it's like, what? You know, how cool does it have to be to freeze to death? You know, the idea we'd say, oh, it's freezing, and the temperature's at 60 degrees or something, 65 mm-hmm. degrees. Oh, I'm freezing.
Yeah, that's
People from the mainland, or people who have a season, they look at us like, you call that cold? They're wearing a t-shirt and shorts.
And they're swimming. What, you swim in the winter? I mean, when I was there, they'd say to me, you swim in the winter? So, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, but the desperation of the everyday people, I don't think he really does have any
compassion. He doesn't have any compassion for those people.
No, and he doesn't serve them. What he's serving is a act. Everything is an act, a well-balanced one. Now, having the military, you know, might is all an act. And shooting missiles is an act. It's to orchestrate that he has some strength, he can turn the heads of the great big enemy, the United States, or whoever, even China, Japan, you know, get there rattling around. But, you know, as long as he's in Pyongyang, he won't starve to death, and he won't see his people starving to death because they got special provisions there. But in the outskirts, where there's no trees, the farming is, you know, going so, you know, their farms are not the best. Although they have the best farmland in the peninsula, South Korea had the worst farmland. Look at the difference. Look at the nighttime view of the North and the South Korea. Big difference. And they had the worst farmland. And who can't feed their people? North Korea. That has to do with the connection of the planet. And where we're headed is to navigate within this safe harbor and not run all over, you know, crashing into others.
So are the people of North Korea, are they going to be able to ascend?
That drive is in all human beings to find. But what happens in their perspective was that the reality of the human nature of their supposed God-human person, their grand leader, will eventually have to get broken. They have to, you know, really realize this guy is no God at all. And this is where the act is being imposed right now. It's very important that he continue to be that God-man. And right now he has gotten technology to say that he is an equivalency in terms of might and power. But it's not true, although he wants to put it. So it's, again, it's all an act, a very highly rehearsed act. But he has no real power except to try to continue to keep the worship going toward him. And is something that you cannot destroy right away. Because if people destroy that, the country fails, and you have nothing but a whole bunch of refugees, and they'll be going to south, to the borders, and you have a terrible refugee problem. We already see what happened in the Middle East. And they might be a little bit better, but they may still come over with the concept of not appreciating where they're running to, which is not a good thing. You run away from a bad thing to run away from a place you can survive and not appreciate that. This is where my introduction to, you might say, the New Jerusalem orbiting Saturn is like an introduction into the culture of heaven. And the culture of heaven, as I said, is a mixed with people from the level of material mortal beings to higher material beings, Barancha beings, and to even like one of the ones that I would say high Barancha being would be a Barancha companion. Now, a Barancha companion was made apparent to me by Riley Martin. He had a little friend named Question. You familiar with Question?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, for sure.
What was Question?
He was like a marsupial little space beaver.
Uh-huh.
And he was a companion for Riley, so Riley could have someone to talk to and not go nuts thinking where he is.
Right. And I saw Riley talking to him. He was talking down, like, to a level where maybe a preschooler would be, you know. And I couldn't see him. You know, either he was, the question was behind someplace, I couldn't see him, or he was invisible to my eyes. And my eyes were not fully acclimated to, you might say, the Marantia spectrum, where I needed to have a, you know, broader spectrum, because the Marantia spectrum includes spiritual eyes. You might call it spiritual eyes, because they are somewhat imaginary in our spiritual eyes. It's the closest thing I can say. Can you, you know, the Marantia vision is fantastic when it's turned on. It's like you can zoom in, clarity, unbelievable clarity, and then zoom in, zoom out, and it is able to see light and iridescence beyond, but it is a, you might say, a super elevated level of vision, where it's above our level of vision and it's added to it. So we don't lose the lower level of vision, but we add to it. The Marantia space, Marantia companion question, the space beaver that Riley was talking to. But just the idea of his interaction being so real, you know, it was something that tells me that there's a lot more going on there that I could not see. I believe that there was art there that I could not see. So all of this is a mix, and we've got to, you know, climb a higher level, and it's partly in terms of our vision, our ability to envision. That's where the source of dreams and visions come from. It's part of the Marantia realm, and it is something that is added to what we, you know, open our eyes and see, and any normal persons who can do that, you know. But there's also a level above that. So that Marantia reality is there, as well as a super spiritual, fully spiritual beings, such as the Varandadek Most High, who was a being of pure light energy. So anyway, that's all of them functioning very smoothly together. It's not classes. It's not a class system, you know, which is something that they were talking about in terms of the Koreas. The North Korea had this very system of classes, you know. Yeah, he's a high class person, or they're nothing people, you know. So I don't know. Anyway, that's something that happens over there. So kind of saying that, you know, could very well be in the viewpoint of some of our celestial friends as like a North Korea in comparison to where they're at. And we have a lot of problems still. We still have a lot of problems.
Could you say that again? What you compare? You compared us compared to the Celestials and the North Koreans?
Yeah, our Celestials may be looking at Irancha as like a North Korea to them. You know, like, oh, you got a lot to, you know, have.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Your system has got kinks in it that you don't want to let go of, you know. Mm-hmm. And it may not necessarily be the war machine, you know, because there is a purpose in it. But it has a lot to do with sharing and our unwillingness to share. A lot of times what happens in our trade, something in the trade area has to also break down. So it becomes a sharing type of trade, not a funneling of financial energy, where trade can actually become a part of this trade deal. Is we'll come in and we'll build 10 bridges because you guys can't have it, and if you can build those bridges, your country will be better. I'm not speaking out of something that wasn't done before. I'm speaking out of going across the actual bridge that was donated to Cambodia by Japan. And Japan sort of saying, we're sorry that, you know, World War II and all over the Southeast Asia, and, you know, did bad things during World War II. And want to help. So we built you this bridge of peace. So we crossed this bridge, and it's a really nice bridge. And the tour guide told me that story, how it was donated. The Cambodian people didn't pay for it. It was, you know, pretty much paid for by Japan. Right? I think they trained the workers and everything that needed to build it from Cambodia, so they had, you know, higher skilled people later on. So that's the kind of trade that I'm talking about. It's not an American invention. Maybe it is, but it's been practiced by, you know, like another great economy of the world, Japan.
Well, Chris from Liverpool, New York, he writes about September 23rd, last Tuesday, what you were speaking about, September 23rd being another marker, and where did the September 23rd come from? And he writes, he says, "Hello, Curtis, Michael, and listeners. I was just listening to your last show where Michael spoke about the September 23rd sign. His words reminded me of a passage in the Urantia book that has always stuck out to me. It's from paper 111:1.9, and I've attached an image containing this passage. This data holds even more significance to me, as September 23rd is my birthday. I couldn't think of a better gift than to visit a new Jerusalem. Well, I'd settle for a ride in a saucer, ha. I hope everything is well, and as always, keep up the good work. Chris from Liverpool." And I believe he takes an image of the New Jerusalem, and he places this passage from the Urantia book, and it's a few lines here. It says, and this is from paper 111:1.9. "Mind is your ship, the adjuster is your pilot, the human will is captain. The master of the mortal vessel should have the wisdom to trust the divine pilot to guide the ascending soul into the Urantia harbors of the eternal survival. Only by selfishness, selffulness, and sinfulness can the will of man reject the guidance of such a loving pilot and eventually wreck the mortal career upon the evil shoals of rejected mercy and upon the rocks of embraced sin. With your consent, this faithful pilot will safely carry you across the barriers of time and the handicaps of space to the very source of the divine mind and on beyond, even to the paradise Father of adjusters. And thank you, Chris, from Liverpool. And Chris is the one who sent that image of Richard Hoagland pointing to the sphere and the celestial guards around the New Jerusalem. And he said, what's that doing there? That was remarkable to see Richard. I wish Richard Hoagland would call you, Michael, and say, hey, I got to talk to you.
Well, yeah, well, anyway, those kind of people have their niche, you know, and it can't be blown apart by people who are experiencers, theorists and experiencers, and those that are, they're quite different, because a theorist has a lot of theories and a researcher has a lot of research, but an experiencer has genuine experiences and lessons to be learned. But I want to share, my purpose is to share the reality of the experience, and the purpose of which was summarized by that verse, Tony Rancho book, concerning our the bridge point of our mind, the actual soul of our reality, the true reality of ourselves. I mentioned earlier that taking 3,000 volts through my body, shaking up, and blowing a hole in my knee, and the back of my hand was full of dots and holes and burns from the 3,000 volts going through me. And I still could think and reason the whole time. I knew exactly what was happening. I said, oh my goodness, I did it to myself. And it was a whole conversation. It could have been, sitting there 1 or 2 seconds. 1 second could explode into to me to be like 1 hour, you know. But I don't know the time, but it was enough to burn me. But the idea of the mind superseding even the effect of electrocution or electric violent electric shock, and that it's horrible actually when you think about the electrocution, the electric chair, the smell of burning skin, burning flesh, and yet knowing that this individual is going to escape his body in a kind of a horrible way. Probably be better to have your head severed, to be beheaded. I think the guillotine was probably merciful. Just up to the guillotine, maybe it was not so good. Hanging was probably worse. But to have gone through the crucifixion experience that Christ went through, and to do that willingly and knowing full well that he could have stopped at any time, he could have, is quite a gift to us, having, you might say, a universe creator who can truly empathize, sympathize, and relate to the human struggle, and to that North Korean boy whose hope, his greatest hope, was to go through that next rubbish can and maybe find a morsel of food. And he also mentioned that he went through a few of them earlier and there was no food in them. So this is a little bit of a lesson of our divine ascent and the overcoming, basically, that yet clinging on very strongly to wanting to live. in spite of the situation. That probably has brought many more people closer to, you know, their God consciousness. I pray to God, you know, it's like when things get really hard, that's when they start seeking God. And if it takes that, then it is worth it. Because once contacting that divine guide that is already partnering with us to safely navigate us toward and into divinity, the true safe harbor, that is what it's all about. It's one of the things that I really had gotten from the New Jerusalem experience. Not only looking at a bunch of aliens, all different kinds. They're all people. I remember classifying them as wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. And you just felt, well, when Nella made you feel comfortable, then you really felt you were in a safe harbor?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You went from real fright to...
Yeah, from absolute terror to being absolutely engulfed in love, you might say, and not having any fear anymore.
Well, I wonder if the people in North Korea could ever reach that in their lifetime.
Yeah. They're the same people. North Korea and South Korea, they're the same people. Their language has not changed to the point where, you know, you're from North Korea. You know, it's like the U.S. has distinctive accents from different parts of the country. You know, I got a supposed Hawaiian accent, but there are areas where you're from, well, what part of the South, you know, the Texas or Louisiana, they're different, you know, but you know, it's the South. And then parts of New York got a little different accent. But in Koreas, their Korean is the same. And they're not that long apart, and culturally identical in their history and culture. The difference is how the human spirit was harnessed, and one harnessed by a false teaching and brain training. Versus one aligned to let the human spirit align with the liberty allowed for by the relation to spirit of truth, enabling the thought adjuster to function, the divine fractal. There's creativity and inventiveness pouring in. And China is not very far behind in terms of their awakening in terms of their Christianity. And in former communist Russia, the old Russian Orthodox is becoming alive again, but with a new twist. That new twist is that the unorthodox Christianity is also thriving. Yeah. So there's a change in the sense of the planet when it happens. The experiments to push down one group of people in favor of another. And that was basically Judaism, but it's a Judaism, but Zionist. The time of Christ that put him on the cross were basically religious politicians of the day. The Sanhedrin were religious politicians who believed that they were the chosen ones and they had the right to rule the world one day, and they would overcome everything and they would end up becoming the elite, the absolute rulers of the planet. That's still going on, and that has some modern relevancies, but there's others too that are going on and that really have taken the light off of various parts of the society, and others are turning back on. So, but that spirit of truth is moving throughout the planet.
You think it's moving throughout the planet?
Yes. It's moving in areas which at one time China under Mao Zedong, or any form of religion, was met with severe punishment. Yet those Christian missionaries were able to get Bibles into the hand where a bit of truth would mark their way, and the actual spiritual energy, that spirit, Holy Spirit, that would drive people toward finding greater truth, was operational. One of the interesting things was this girl from North Korea realized love was very real, an important factor that was never talked about. But when she saw the movie Titanic and how, you know, this terrible event, stupid event of a failure of a ship. I mean, talk about failure. But instead, the true victory was love that overcame everything. Even overcame precious substance, precious gems. These things. She was glad to see that it was real.
Yes, love is real.
Yeah. And God is love. So that energy that flows, that you might call it living water, yeah, food that if you eat of, that's basically love. It's, you know, one of the things about religious cannibalism was talked about when Jesus Christ said, you know, if you eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, you know, you will never perish. It was put in a way that the mortal man who had no spiritual bearing would say that this foolishness is cannibalism. But the spiritual man would be enlightened by the actual to find that if it is material, what is the substance of the being of Christ? Physicality is what he was talking about. Definitely couldn't have been just physical. Had to be something other than that. And what was it? And this is some of the things I experienced. The Marantia realm, the full spiritual realm of the Veranda deck. And most of all, the similarities between our mind and the mind of even the highest angels were fully integrated, could relate. In fact, we could relate at a higher level than we can relate between each other. the telepathic embrace between conversing with others of higher development was so fluid, it was normal. It was basically, I understand you. Oh, you don't need to go through those extra words to be politically correct or whatever. There is no politically correct. There is just love that we need to somehow arrange between each other. Once you get that sort of straightened out, then the lights will come on.
Well, I hope the lights come on for North Korea someday.
They could easily. It's amazing how, if it is allowed to happen, you would see the lights turn on in South Korea all over it within less than a decade, within a couple of few years. It would be amazing. There are so many South Koreans who have other part of their family lost up in the north that are willing to put their great wealth, and many of them have gotten very wealthy in the industrialization of South Korea. Willing to just bring civilization to the north.
Well, I'm glad they feel that way. I've never been to South Korea, and it makes me feel good to know that their brotherhood is right there in their own country, just across that line.
Yeah, there's a train bridge and a train ready to go. But North doesn't want it. It's connected. If they just open it, it'll go all the way to Europe. Yeah. Right to Russia. Trans-Siberian Railroad goes all the way down and connects to North Korea. They open that one section across the bridge. That train will be connecting the South Korea all the way to Europe, and the prosperity of the North will definitely change. Of course, the leadership fears is they'll lose all power, because they'll empower the rest of the people, you know, to find their own destiny.
Mm-hmm. You know. Absolutely. Well.
And of course, the destiny of each human is, if it's truly guided not by selfishness, greed, or any of the negatives, but are guided by brotherhood, especially brotherhood, would bring about a great awakening civilization.
It's like he has an entire country incarcerated.
Well, it's essentially what it is, but brainwashed in, definitely, in Pyongyang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's come to a point where, you know, as long as it doesn't torture me right now, I'll go through the act, and it's an act. It is definitely an act. Mm-hmm. Act happy. Yeah.
Every time you see that Kim Jong-un and his generals, I'll say, his military generals, they're all laughing. They're always laughing, always smiling and laughing. I guess if you don't smile and laugh, they get rid of them. What?
Keep him in a good mood.
Him in a good mood.
Yeah.
What a crime.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.